بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Righty ho folks, so hope you're all doing good inshallah. Right off the top, what's the key things? The key is that next week there will be no site. There'll be no lesson on site, it'll be online. And then the week after that, I'm pretty sure that we are back on site. In fact, I'll confirm right now. One second. Yes, inshallah. So, no lesson next week. Inshallah, the lesson will be broadcast from Mecca, bi'idhnillahi ta'ala. The new time will be standard for the next few weeks. So starting next week, it'll be 8:35 p.m. And then the weekend after as well, the week after as well, the week I'm back on site. So online next week, coming Wednesday, it will be 8:35 p.m. UK time. All right, so roughly about an hour. That's reflecting post-Isha. All right, but then when we come back here in the masjid on the week after, the 9th of October, then that Isha will be 8:15 in the masjid, and we will start at 8:35, inshallah. And then we'll keep it roughly around that time, because then the week after, or the week after that, there will be the clock changes, and then there will be a new Isha time that will then remain for the rest of the next 3, 4, 5 months. So we're just going to play that by ear, whether we change that. We're not sure whether the Isha is going to go to a 7:30 final kind of thing, or whether it's going to be 8 p.m. So we'll let that kind of stabilize. But basically, for the next few weeks, at least for the next 3 weeks at least, then Isha will be the class will be at 8:35 p.m. UK time. All right, that's the first thing. So no, second thing is no class here on site, just online. Any other announcements that I need to make beforehand? No. All right. Huh? Who? Which class? Oh, arts. Yes, arts. For those who have not taken art, which is a really nice class on getting people started and how to actually make more use of the Quran themselves without having to, you know, necessarily memorize it all or start, you know, to learn all the Arabic for it or to study tafsir or tadabbur in detail. This is like a primer and not just a good intro, it's a real feel-good class. It's also the kind of class that you bring some people that you want to give da'wah to as well. You know, that need to see a deen at, you know, the wow level. You know, a lot of folks like wow stuff. This is a wow class. It's not like, you know, fiqh and heavy and all the rest of it. It's lots of wows, gems, wows, you know, for all you packs that love all the wows and the gems. Right? So that's going to be October the 18th, inshallah. October 18th is in Glasgow. That's the last one that's going to be held, certainly in this country. Possibly only something in January abroad, but certainly in the UK, that's it. It's had its run, as far as I know, as far as I'm concerned. Wallahu alam. Is Thingy Yahya confirmed for December, yeah?
Yeah.
What day is that?
14th
of December, inshallah. Sheikh Yahya Ibrahim will be here as well. So that'll be nice. But obviously, we'll have plenty of time to prepare for that. All right, folks. So let's go with the English then, or the Arabic and the English of the text. What are you doing these days, Shaz? Are you putting on the screen, or what happens now? Then it has all that audio business, yeah? No, don't worry about it. All right, so in the Arabic then, folks, we are in the, say the third paragraph, on the third condition, all right, or the third prerequisite. الثالث أن يكونوا بقرية مستوطنين وتصح فيما قارب البنيان من الصحراء فإن نقصوا قبل إتمامها استأنفوا ظهرا. So we're doing the last part of that. فإن نقصوا قبل إتمامها استأنفوا ظهرا ومن أدرك مع الإمام منها ركعة أتمها جمعة وإن أدرك أقل من ذلك أتمها ظهرا إذا كان نوى الظهر ويشترط تقدم خطبتين ومن شرط صحتهما حمد الله والصلاة على رسوله محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وقراءة آية والوصية بتقوى الله عز وجل وحضور العدل المشترط ولا يشترط لهما الطهارة ولا أن يتولاهما من يتولى الصلاة. we're not going to get through that. We might cover that by next week, but anyway. So, in English, this is what we're doing this week, exactly this week. If the number of attendees falls below the legal minimum before the prayer is completed, that's the Jumu'ah prayer, of course, they must restart it again as the Dhuhr prayer. They must restart it again as the Dhuhr prayer. Whoever catches one raka'ah with the imam should complete it as the Friday prayer. However, if he catches less than that, he must complete it as the Dhuhr prayer, as long as he intended it as Dhuhr. It is another prerequisite to precede the prayer with two sermons. For them to be valid, they must A. contain the praise of Allah, B. have salutations sent upon His Messenger Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, C. have a verse recited, D. have an admonition to the taqwa of Allah, the Almighty, the Exalted, and then E. have in attendance the minimum number of legal attendees. There's no point going on further. So our focus then is on this new part. If the number of attendees falls below the legal minimum before the prayer is completed. When you hear that off the bat, what do you think that's referring to? What's the example here? Who?
The caravan.
So how would it be connected to that particular hadith?
Because a lot of people left to go see the caravan.
So that's what it's referring to. Well done, right? Because immediately from the, when you hear this text, it doesn't actually, you know, you've got to try to work out what's it referring to. It's referring to all these people who are saying, all the scholars that are saying that there's a set number, minimum number, yeah? And obviously the text is saying 40. And so they're saying that if 40 is the minimum number for the Jum'ah to be valid, then that 40 must be there at all moments. And if at any moment it goes less than 40, effectively the prayer is disqualified or invalidated, and the prayer then needs to be restarted again, and the author has said it's got to be Dhuhr. That's basically what's happening. And so the obvious example of this, you know, actually, I ended last week by saying that the English that we covered was that thirdly, these attendees, so the minimum number of attendees we said according to the Hanabila is 40, and for us it's 3, yeah? Whoever, whatever number it is, all of these attendees must be resident nationals of that town. And we said, however, that prayer, meaning the Jum'ah prayer, is also valid outside any built-up areas if it is close by in the rural surroundings. And I gave a couple of examples of at the time of the Prophet ﷺ in Medina. And then what we stated, and this was very important, actually part of our journey, LP, is that some of these things have to be determined by urf. So when a person says, well, what is a built-up area? How close is close? How far is rural? We had that discussion, right? And Sheikh then gave an example and said, listen, it's not some kind of point of weakness to think that, oh, the Sharia has not said 3 miles, or the Sharia has not said 10 miles. The Sharia often leaves these things in a relaxed state in order to, and the wisdom is, I think, clear. I mean, the wisdom might not have been clear then, which goes to show their iman, they're more than happy to go with things and they understand it and they take it in their stride. But us now, 1400 years later, in hindsight, can now see a lot of the wisdoms of these things being left open. Because if they were kept closed and kept very restricted, we'd have trouble trying to identify, you know, what is even Cheeto, for example? What is even, you know, Mississauga, for example, when it's outside of the main, you know, central Toronto. And every country will have that scenario where what is a city, what is a suburb, what is rural? Like Milton, for example, you know, a lot of our students and, you know, some of my friends live in Milton, which is it's like the Cheadle of, well, it's not like a Cheadle, but I guess it's like but anyway, let's say it's like the Cheadle of Manchester, right? Meaning it's right on the outskirts. I remember going to Milton when there was nothing there, and the Torontonians who are online will confirm that, right? Well, there's hardly anything there. You go to Milton today, it's like, it's just its own town. Very busy, bustling, masajid, this, that, blah, 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 right? Now, if you imagine 10 years ago, 20 years ago, what would the ruling of Jum'ah be over there? Now it's like, you know, nobody would consider saying that it's not part of main Toronto. And so the Sharia leaving these things relaxed allows for these things to happen. And to give that example, we spoke about the hirs, which is the concept of what is to be defined as actually a safekeeping or safe when it comes to the issue or the ruling of cutting the hand of stealing. And that the Sharia has left that yani in a way that as long as the people generally come to an agreement, then we're going to go with that. Yeah. And so after having given that, yeah. What kind of problem? What level problem? Ross. So then? Huh? To do the whole thing?
Yeah.
And they don't need to go anywhere?
No one needs to go anywhere.
Okay, go on then. So we're going to give it 5 minutes. We'll take some questions and some discussion on whether it's this subject or anything else.
About Muqeem,
yeah? So one second, are we using the kind of Hanbali definition of Muqeem, meaning that there's like three very separate kind of... you're using the Hanbali kind of definition that he's a musafir who is still considers himself to be musafir but temporarily resident in a place. Yeah, okay.
So there's a big group of them.
Yeah.
And they're in a place where there are enough residents that will not become obligated.
Yes.
Do they have to join the other Jummah?
Yes. So they themselves during Jum'ah, according to these positions, according to the scholars, it would not be a valid Jum'ah because their own Jum'ah prayer does not have the minimum number of attendees on whom it was obligated upon if it was just a large group of them. Then if you were to add to that group of Muqeem, the minimum number, so we're, in our case it's three, if you add three of the locals to it, then it became obligatory upon those folks, and because they established it, it became obligatory upon us to join them. But it never became obligated independently or intrinsically upon us, Muqeem group. Yeah, so two. So whether the imam is resident or not is another discussion. In my opinion, doesn't need to be. What's more important is that there are three people, individuals, that the Jum'ah can be obligated upon. So basically saying that whether the imam is one of them or not, as long as there are three residents proper, or people of that town, not travelers, not leaving that space, then the Jum'ah needs to be established. Once the Jum'ah is established, regardless of who establishes it, it becomes obligated to attend by all the people who are in that vicinity or surrounding. Now, that's all easy enough. The tough part here, and I will openly admit that it's tough. Qabari, you know what? Can you move these two chairs? They're irritating you, man. Take it to the back, please, yeah? The tough part is that what does there mean, right? Some of the guys asked the question last week. They said, so what if we're in the office as a traveler and the folks on the Friday that I'm working in their office, they're going to Jum'ah as they would because they're from London, for example, and even though there's no Jum'ah in the actual masjid, in the workplace itself, but maybe there's a masjid nearby 10, 15 minutes, whatever. It's the local masjid of that part of London. This is not an easy thing to answer, actually. I'm trying to think like, you can see both answers. So you can see the answer that is obligated upon those musafirin in the office because the masjid isn't actually right there, but going out. But then on the other hand, I can see it being obligated because everybody has got up, Muslims who are resident, and they all jumped into cars like normally do, pack them out, and they've gone to Jummah. You know what I mean? So you can see that that's a tricky situation versus the easy scenario of driving down a motorway as a musafir, pull over at a motorway or something like that. You know, that's an easy one. The other difficult one is driving down the M6 and you decide to pull over into Birmingham to eat, for example, around the Jummah time. Are you now part and parcel of the local community in which there's tens of masajid, you know, within 5 minutes of you, wherever you are in Birmingham? That's now going to mean that you've got to pray. And so for me, to avoid, and I don't have a correct answer, and I doubt that anyone can answer this with authority. And so we have to go to then the safety and all this and that, whatever, which is that person should pray Jummah if they're anywhere near the Muslims and it's being established. And if you don't want to and you want to avoid it, then just avoid going into any built up area and keep on the outsides. So if you're saying that, so this is now not a town city situation, this is like a gathering. Correct. That's right. And according to the majority of the fuqaha and the correct position, all of us would not be praying Jummah. Right? It would be just a Friday prayer that would be prayed because everyone there is a musafir. If, for the sake of argument, there were three people that it was the locality for, right? Then different story. But as you said, the greater assumption is that everyone there was a musafir. Everybody there would be, you know, not individually, intrinsically obligated to the Jummah prayer, and therefore it shouldn't be established. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Everybody would be expecting that. Everybody would be thinking that. And if it's established, is it a valid prayer? It is a valid prayer. Once the Jummah has been established in that manner, in my opinion, it's a valid prayer. If the numbers are obviously over three, and the like, it's difficult to say that it's an invalid prayer, even though the majority of the scholars saying it's an invalid prayer. You've got to now pray Dhuhr again, right? Because what you've done is that you've partaken into a process or whatever, which is not, is neither Dhuhr and it's neither Jummah. That's their argument. And what there's no doubt about, whether it's a prayer, a valid prayer or not, is that it's a bid'ah. That's what there's no doubt about, in my mind. You're doing something that the Prophet ﷺ did not do. But Allah knows best. Did you do the reset thing? Oh, you did do the reset. So obviously, if it didn't work, then why are we? Huh? No. But saying what up though?
What?
Saying what up? No, no, but I'm saying, obviously the problem with the net, isn't it? It's not your computer.
No, it's the problem with their system.
Their system. So the wider point is that we don't have, would it still be streaming on the original stream key?
Yeah.
So then we don't need to then do anything, Shaz. We can tell them to go, and the original video is what they'll watch later tonight. As long as you're sure that it's still streaming on the original stream key. How do you know that? How do you know that the YouTube product?
Because your data wants YouTube.
So you basically, what you need to do is record the lesson.
Yeah. Where's the face plate on that
Right. Nobody got nothing to chat about. It's so boring, man.
It's quite late in the house, so we are saying something at the moment.
Bad. Was it you who asked me about the office thing?
No.
It was you, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, if it's me, I'm going. Especially if I'm getting a lift. Oh, so there weren't any colleagues.
No,
so you went based upon the fact that literally a masjid established in Jawa'a next day. I mean, you see, that's the problem, right? It's difficult to, with certainty, state that one particular thing is over the other. What are you going to try and do?
I'll take this one from there.
For what reason?
I need this for the audio.
Go on.
No, you keep that where you are.
Oh, okay. Got it. Say that again? No, I don't think the issue then it doesn't really matter about whether it's the nearest masjid or not. It's basically what obligated you to even leave your office in the first place, right? And as I said, Ihtisham just said that actually nobody went from the office. It was just the fact that I'm looking at the masjid and, you know, people are going and how can I not be going? And that's, by the letter, that's the actual concept. It's not like someone who's with you in your house or your office or whatever. So it's not a straightforward one. Now, you see, sometimes you've got to take a step back from the law, right? And go from the letter of the law and look at the spirit of the law. And we remind ourselves that where is this whole big push on Jum'ah coming from? And it comes from the ayah, فَسْعَوْا إِلَىٰ ذِكْرِ اللَّهِ, right? And rush towards the remembrance of Allah. The understanding there, basically, you know, is that you're in the dunya, you know, وَذَرُوا الْبَيْعَ. Yeah, rush to the dhikr of Allah and leave the bay'a. And bay'a is obviously work, and bay'a means money and business and life and whatever. By definition, therefore meaning that you're not leaving al-bay'a the rest of the time. But now, leave the bay'a. And therefore, you're not getting much of a reminder of who, you know, what matters and what's important and whatever. And, you know, insan here is basically needing that reminder, whether you're a traveler, not a traveler, blah, 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 in principle. And so, I think that's kind of, you know. But even that, if you think about it, is not perfect as an explanation, because we'd say, what about the traveler? He doesn't need the reminder. Maybe some of you will say, actually, when you're traveling, it's a reminder all the time. That's a bit kind of righteous, to be honest. Kind of like piety talk. Maybe it's the opposite. When a person, as we know, is away from home, he gets up to more no good and maybe needs the reminder more. Maybe needs to keep in the game more. Praise less. Fast less. Less of the people who hold him accountable. No family, blah, blah, blah. Maybe he needs a Jum'ah more. Then the old argument comes is that what actually is a Jum'ah? Is the asl of the Jum'ah the dhikr of Allah? Or is it the gathering of the community? Or is it both? Obviously, you're going to say everything and both and whatever. But if it's the gathering of the community, that very well explains why there's no Jum'ah upon the traveler, because he's not part of that community. And it's about gathering in every area, the Muslims together and checking people out, make sure everyone's all right, blah, blah, blah. So there's so many multiple kind of things going on that, you know, it could all be in play. Sorry, if I had. In one building, did you say?
No,
it's got nothing to do with the building. You mean the masjid?
Yeah, masjid.
Well, so it has got nothing to do with the building, the whole kind of 40 and all the rest of it, has got nothing to do with the building, because the Jum'ah can be established outside, right? So it's the locale. The area that, you know, if it's a big masjid, then it's a bigger area. If it's a smaller masjid, it's going to be a smaller area. So the point is not a building or a mosque, it's a area, right? So it's quite possible, you know, like the early Jum'ahs that were established by Mus'ab ibn Umair and the like, that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be done definitely outside a mosque of any sort, and just a flat open gathering. That's like the asl, almost. Yeah. So it really was a system, Shazia. It really was a system. And by the way, why are we... is this a brand new video?
No.
So, yeah. Okay, I guess.
Yeah, it was one video.
Right. Folks, I if you can just comment and make it clear that you can hear and see everything perfectly well. If so, then just make sure that you go back to the beginning of the video. Oh no, you're saying there's going to be nothing there.
No, the whole first bit of the lesson will be
there. You said there's no data and all this business.
Yeah,
yeah, well, they saw that as well. So, okay. All right, to summarize what we started with then, we read out the text and we were basically saying and summarizing the back end of last week's lesson, actually. We were saying that these things go back to urf, determining whether the communities on the outside, the rural kind of areas, whether, you know, there's going to be a measurement of some sort that determines exactly whether that can have a Jum'ah or not. And I gave the example of Milton, which in Toronto, which I think is a really good example, because when I went there like X years ago, there was no chance that it was, you know, considered to be a built up area, let alone of Muslims and the like. Now, you go there, it's a, you know, big city, proper city, and, you know, you'd expect it. And that's because that's because clearly it's close to the rest of the city. It's seen as now Toronto and obviously large community of permanent residents. And then Sheikh then says, to kind of summarize and finish off with this issue, he goes, as for the author, then he's left it open, this concept of al-qurb, meaning close, okay? And whenever something is left open, then that means that the guiding principle is going to be the urf. It means that the urf itself, what the people understand themselves amongst themselves, is going to be the deciding factor, the criterion. فَلَوْ أَنَّ أَهْلِ الْقَرْيَةِ مَثَلًا So he goes that if, for example, the people of that particular area, that village, that town, whatever, they had to go 10 kilometers outside of the city boundaries, he goes, and they establish the Jum'ah, go, this is too far. He goes, this is too far. So he's putting his neck on the line. This is what no scholar ever wants to do, right? He said, if they go 10 kilometers out, that's too much. Voila, and he goes, you can't say something which is 10 kilometers away is connected to that original starting point, starting city, starting town, starting balad. لكن لو أقاموها على طرف البنيان, but if they were to establish the Jum'ah, you know, you can see, like within a kilometer, you can see the outskirts of the city, you're on the, just outside it, then you know, this is something which is understandable, all the people are going to accept it, there's not going to be a problem. So let's just take that point there. What do you reckon? 10 kilometers. Today, modern times. Yes, that's part of the same town or no? So the majority of people are saying no, and there are a few yeses. So we've got to give some examples, isn't it? What examples are there?
10 kilometers outside of London isn't that far, but 10 kilometers outside of...
Very good point. 10 kilometers outside of London ain't nothing, right? 10 kilometers outside of Sheffield, maybe, or Derby or Somerset could be quite a bit. 10 miles outside, or 10 kilometers outside of Lancaster is proper rural Lake District.
I'd argue the opposite.
You'd say the what?
Opposite.
Go on.
10 kilometers in London can take you 5 hours.
Outside of London.
Even outside, yeah, outside of London, from inside of London. Whereas 10 kilometers outside of Sheffield
will take you. So you're bringing the issue of ease of travel and time into it.
Yeah, because in London, going anywhere is a disaster.
Hmm. Inside, but what about outside? Who can think of some examples? Who can think of an area 10 kilometers outside of a built area? Well, that's the only, mashallah, 1,000 miles outside of civilization. Only Pagal people would want to live there.
Cheadle to Manchester.
Oh yeah, white folks, yeah, that's the one. No, Cheadle is its own area.
No, but if say we were in the States, say, 20 years ago,
you see, this is good point. So I remember when I moved here, right? I don't know if you saw Sheikh Salim, he was here for Maghrib, the legend that he is, mashallah, hafidhahullah. He and Saeed and these boys, when they were here in the like end of 90s, 99 and whatever, when they started the Taraweeh in Hill Green, there was no masjid here. The closest masjid was Didsbury. There was no Heaton masjid, there was no Altrincham masjid. And then when I moved here down the road, then we bought this place, right? Which was the chapel or whatever it was, 2003, I want to say, ish, or maybe 02, something like that. So if you now look at that place here, we're only 2 kilometers away from Didsbury. Do you know what I mean? All of us would go to Makki and to Didsbury for Salah. Didn't see or feel like we're, you know, absolutely part of the same built-up area. No, I don't think Cheetah's a good example at all. You see, the buildings do help, right? Rurality, if that is such a word, rurality, I like it, I'm going with it. There's got to be a real factor here. Where's the rurality in between? This doesn't sound like a real word. Where's the ruralness in between Cheadle and Didsbury and Didsbury and Burnage and Burnage and Manchester? There isn't none. You've got to have some kind of break to start to think that we're on the outskirts. Where's the break? Transport links? No, I don't think it's transport links. I think it's got to be buildings. If you remember like a couple of years ago, remember we were going into this kind of stuff, not a couple of years ago, even last year, talking about buildings which are used versus, you know, decrepit and abandoned. And all that kind of behavior.
What about going south, such as Macclesfield or Congleton?
I think this is the easiest way to understand this, right? If we go look at Macclesfield, Congleton, Hazel Grove, and the like. So by the time you get to Hazel Grove, you've kind of gone through some ruralness. Yeah? I think Hazel Grove is a good example. Hazel Grove is what? 2 kilometers, three? Mm-hmm. Before it kind of starts. Macclesfield is what? That's far, isn't it? Alderley Edge. You see, Alderley Edge is a good example. 10 kilometers from here.
So you can use Glossop.
So you see, so Glossop, yeah. Yeah, Glossop is a very good example, but Glossop is miles away.
No, Glossop and High. High is your closest masjid.
To Glossop.
To Glossop.
Yeah.
Okay, and that is about 4 miles. 3-4 miles.
But
that 3-4 miles, yeah, could take you an hour.
Yeah.
To get in and out.
Yeah. No, bro. I don't think anyone... So, Glossop is a great example. Glossop's got a masjid now, isn't it?
No.
Hasn't?
No.
Right. So, Glossop, I don't think there's anybody that needs to pray Jumu'ah in Glossop. You get what I'm saying? Or rather, there's no Jum'ah to be established in Glossop because that really is outside of the area of the Muslims. The closest masjid is Hyde, which is, you know, miles away. That's the bigger problem, because we know the hadith from last week that if you're in such an area, village, town like Glossop, and if there are three people there and they do not establish the salah, and there's definitely more than three Muslims there, 100%, okay, living resident. There's a now largish Bengali community, isn't it, Shaz?
Sorry?
Largest Bengali community right now in Glossop.
In Glossop, the business wise, they have a few, many Bengali, but they're coming from Hyde, you see.
Yeah. So I certainly I've seen some and whatever, and that's, you know, if you think about this, if you think about the history of the development of masajid, it has always worked like that, following food. So mostly Bengalis, less so the Paks, few Indians maybe. This was the main model that all the masajid eventually ended up in all of these kind of random areas. And once like a family got together, a family or two, they use the upstairs of the restaurant, right? Or the next door, and they establish the Jum'ah until then they gathered enough and then they buy the property. SubhanAllah, that's how the masajid in the West have always, you know, other than the big metropolitan areas like London, East London, Manchester, that's a different thing. That's like, you know, a community of Muslims in the central and whatever. But these other kind of outer areas, like Glossop is a good example. I bet, Shaz, that they establish the Jum'ah in one of those restaurants or one of those thingies. Or Jum'ah prayers anyway. And then it'll turn into, you know, then it'll turn into whatever. So Mazita, you see, you've gone to Sale. You're talking about Cheadle, but Cheadle is not your reference point. It's Altrincham Masjid, isn't it? If you're in Sale, you're not looking at Cheadle. You're looking at Bowden, right? Is it Bowden where the masjid is?
Altrincham
Hale. Hale-ish. That's closer to Sale than looking at Cheadle, isn't it?
Yeah,
so it's not, you know, you've got to kind of... But the most important point here is that the fact that we're all discussing it and we're all unanimously dismissing some, unanimously agreeing others, disagreeing amongst us on others, shows why it needs to be left to the earth. You know what I'm saying? Shows that it needs to be left flexible, shows that let the cities and the spread of people develop. You get what I'm saying? That's one of the wisdoms behind the whole thing. Right. Okay. So, having said all that, Sheikh says, and just to actually finish this point off, he goes, some of the scholars said that it is not possible, it is not permissible to establish Jum'ah at all in any of these rural areas. It's got to be within the city confines. Absolutely must be. And if you go outside in a rural area and establish the Jum'ah, it will not be accepted. Sheikh Uthaymeen says, however, what the author and the Hanbali madhab and the majority of scholars have indicated, that is the more correct position. And that is because the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam himself went out and he would go to the Musalla for Eid al-Adha and Eid al-Fitr, establishing that the congregational prayer can be offered outside of city confines, like I gave the example. And I was watching back the video and I was looking at me doing all this, that, whatever. It was the most confusing thing I've ever done, right? So the simple way of thinking about it in Medina is if you look at Baqiyah, where the graveyard is, on the side of the masjid, now go to the other side of the masjid. So when you go to that other side of the masjid, which is now empty, completely empty, because everything's been knocked down. All the museums that they set up brand new, they knocked those down again as well. Everything's been taken down. This was way outside the city confines of Medina at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, and this is the area in which they used to pray Jum'ah, Eid, and the like. Yep. So that in itself establishes that the Jum'ah in the rural areas would be a valid prayer. Okay? All right. Let's go, because we're a bit kind of thingy here. Let me just let's get move on. Then we'll take some questions at the end. فَإِن نَقَصُوا قَبْلَ إِتْمَامِهَا إِسْتَأْنَفُوا ظُهْرًا. So this is talking about this point that if the number comes down whilst they are establishing the Jum'ah, so we're now going to assume that the prayer has started. So if one of them, for example, leaves under 40, the prayer is invalidated. So he goes, there's 40 people. So I'll give you an example. There's 40 people. They all establish the Jum'ah. One of them breaks their wudu during the prayer. leaves to go and make wudu. Now it's 39. Obviously, this all sounds so crazy. I mean, who's counting the numbers and who's watching all this and who's what's going on here? I don't know yet. But so when he goes, the prayer has to be cancelled there and then, and they need to start it again as dhuhr. Because the condition, the prerequisite of 40 has to be there from the beginning until the end. There has to be listushab, yani it has to continue. It's not like, as long as we start with 40, then we're good to go. No, it's got to be there in the beginning, got to be in the middle, got to be there in the end for it to be the valid prayer. That's the position of the Hanbalis and quite a few of the scholars, and that's the example that they are giving. Sheikh says, Sheikh Uthaymeen, alayhi rahmatullah, he says, the position, the statement of the author is not absolutely comprehensive. It's not like, you know, he needed to add a bit of a caveat, and he didn't. What he should have said, that they start again with dhuhr if there is no time. Because if there was time, then what would you do? You'd obviously, in this crazy scenario, you turn around and say, right guys, we have to cancel the prayer because it's only 39. And then they'd say, listen, it's only going to be 5 minutes and we've still got half an hour left. Yeah? So he goes, yeah, actually, all right. So then we sit and wait for Lala to finish his wudu. He then comes back in again. We're back up to 40. We start the prayer again. And that should be the Jum'ah prayer. And they're obligated to do that because the Jum'ah prayer, as Sheikh Uthaymeen says, has to be established because the time is the time for Jum'ah. You get what I'm saying? Now, if there is no Jum'ah, there's no time to establish the Jum'ah prayer, no other option, then it's got to be done as dhuhr. He says something interesting here as well. He goes, actually, he doesn't say this here. Where does he say that? Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll come to that later. So, Sheikh then says, that's one position of the scholars, and that's certainly what the Hanabila are saying. Some of the scholars said the opposite. They said, no, once that guy's gone, you pray Jum'ah. You carry on praying Jum'ah. The only thing that mattered was how it started. And it started correctly, and it doesn't matter how it ends. And it was started with all the conditions correctly and all the rest of it. And here's the key. To now invalidate this prayer requires an evidence. Because it's been authentically started in all of the right ways. For you to now say that this prayer is invalid, it requires an evidence. And there is no evidence. So therefore, we will build upon the starting and therefore the Jum'ah is to be prayed. So these are two opposite positions. The third position, Sheikh Uthaymeen says, and he makes a point, he goes, and when you have a third position that's often in between the two, this is normally going to be the best position. It's normally not just the moderate and the middle, but it's normally the most correct position. Sheikh is making a side point. He goes, this median position, right, this middle position is that if this decrease in the minimum number happens after one raka'ah has been offered, then they continue as Jum'ah, i.e. it happens in the second raka'ah. But if it occurred in the first raka'ah before even any Jum'ah has been achieved by anybody, i.e. before going for ruku'ah in the first raka'ah, if the number was to go down, then in this scenario, they have to stop, cancel that prayer, and then start again as dhuhr, or as appropriate, until that guy comes back, or the numbers increase, etc., etc. And this, Sheikh Uthaymeen says, this was the position of Ibn Qudama. Al-Muwaffaq, whenever Al-Muwaffaq is quoted, Al-Muwaffaq meaning the one that Allah gave tawfiq to, of course, one of the greatest scholars of all time, and certainly from the Hanabila, greatest scholars of them, author of Al-Mughni, the greatest book of Hanbali commentary on fiqh, then this is his position, Ibn Qudama, Al-Maqdisi. And Sheikh says, this is for me the strongest opinion. So what Sheikh Uthaymeen is taking this position, he's saying that, look, it's neither here and it's neither there, it's in the middle. If the number goes down in the first raka'ah, okay, we start again as dhuhr, because it's gone. But if we've already prayed one raka'ah of the Jum'ah prayer, then we're going to continue. What's our evidence, he says, the statement of the Prophet من أدرك ركعة من الصلاة فقد أدرك الصلاة. Whoever catches one unit, one raka'ah of the salah has caught all of the salah. So as long as you have caught that one raka'ah, then you've got that salah. And that's it. So, وَكَمَا أَنَّهُ لَوْ أَدْرَكَ مِنَ الْجُمْعَةِ رَكَعَةً أَتَمَّهَا جُمْعَةً مَا أَنَّهُ يُصَلِّيَ الثَّانِيَةَ وَحْدَهُ. He goes, this is the same as a person who would come late to the masjid, for example, but he caught one unit of the Jum'ah prayer, as we're about to see in a second, and as we mentioned, obviously, last week anyway, that person, he's caught the Jum'ah. Yes, he's going to stand up. Yes, he's going to make up one rak'ah by himself, but he caught enough of the Jum'ah to continue the prayer as Jum'ah. So they're making a qiyas upon that point as well. I think that makes sense, isn't it? Yeah, what the argument is. Then he says, he goes, as for those people who said that, no, you got to do the Jum'ah regardless. As long as you've started the prayer after 5 seconds, it doesn't matter who leaves. But you got to go. And obviously, there is that hadith in the background, the hadith of Jabir, the hadith in Muslim, the hadith of the 40 that prayed, and then, that they were sitting there for the Jum'ah, caravan comes, they go off, yes. But the Prophet ﷺ continued the Jum'ah without looking at that number. The idea is that there was enough, you know, they're kind of using the argument, they're saying what was there at the beginning established it, the Prophet ﷺ continued anyway. Our response to that would be multiple, one of them being that, well, we didn't consider 40 to be a minimum number anyway, so 12 remaining behind is more than the 3 that we require anyway, so it's not necessarily evidence regardless. And Sheikh says, anyway, this is not a, he goes that this is not valid, that if there is a condition for an action and that condition is lost, there's no doubt that the action is invalidated. And we are saying that the number for the action is this and that it's a condition, and if you don't meet it, it's invalidated. Let's just change the condition. Here we're focusing on a number. Let's make the condition wudu. What happens if a person doesn't have wudu? Prayer is invalidated. It's not like he can go make wudu, come back and start from where he left off, right? That's gone. Now he is invalidated. He has to go and start again, right? And as an individual, obviously imam something different. Sheikh says that's the same for if he breaks his wudu. That's the same if there's a major display of awrah, trousers fall down or everything, you know, like proper long period of time, significant display. The same would invalidate the prayer. Then, you know, him coming back, he starts again, etc. He goes, what's the difference between this and the number? So that's okay to accept it as a class position. But just generally, this kind of focus on numbers and, you know, at what point did a number go down and whatever. There's a lot of assumptions going on there, how people are even, you know, seeing or knowing that. Then the next point is, the Shaykh then said, وَمَنْ أَدْرَكَ مَعَ الْإِمَامِ مِنْهَا رَكَعَةً أَتَمَّهَا جُمْعَةً. And whoever is able to catch a raka'ah, all right, with the imam, then he will continue that prayer as Jum'ah. And this is the big thing that we need to answer. This is what all of us have experienced. And obviously as the days get shorter, now more of us will experience it by missing the Jum'ah prayer. Obviously in the summer, praying it later, lots of time, but now Asr kicking in early, this is much more likely to happen. So, what is the issue going on here? You got to catch a raka'ah with the imam. What is a raka'ah? Again, we come back to that old chestnut of what is raka'ah? Is it yani with the ruku'a? Is it with the sajda? Imam Sheikh Uthaymeen here very clearly says, raka'ah tamma. What we mean here is the full 2 sajda, everything. So, ruku'a, salah, this, that, come down, do sajda, and then do the second sajda and start to get on your way back up. This is basically what you need to pray with the imam to consider your then prayer to be Jum'ah. Obviously, that doesn't necessarily clarify anything per se, because obviously to catch that raka'ah only needs to be in the ruku'a, to catch the raka'ah. But in terms of you praying with the imam, it needs to be a full raka'ah, if that makes sense. Okay? What's the evidence for this, that you've got to catch at least one raka'ah? The Prophet ﷺ said, "Man adraka raka'atan min as-salah faqad adraka as-salah." Same hadith that we just mentioned before. Whoever catches one raka'ah from the prayer has then caught that prayer. Therefore, if you catch one raka'ah of the Jum'ah prayer, you got the Jum'ah prayer. Therefore, by definition, if you don't catch one raka'ah, then you have not caught that prayer. Even if you pray all of the tashahud, all of the sajda, all of the everything, you did not catch that prayer because you didn't catch the rak'ah. I.e., therefore, what is it saying? That if you get to the Jum'ah prayer when the imam has said Sami Allah, said the scene of Sami Allah, that's the end of the ruku'ah. Whether he's still there or coming up or stood up, it doesn't matter. We're now looking at the scene here because that is the, if you like, the activator of the next stage. Or you can say it is the end of the ruku'ah stage when the imam says, and so when he says Ya Allahu liman hamida, and you've arrived and you haven't said Allahu Akbar, and Allahu Akbar, regardless of how poor, so you've got to say Allahu Akbar before he says, yeah, because your takbiratul ihram is the entering into the prayer. So you've got to enter the prayer. Now you know what you've got to do, right? Once you've entered into, obviously we covered this in lots of detail a couple of years back. So you come and you've stood in the line, you said Allahu Akbar. Now you've got two key things to get done, actually three key things to get done. You've got to say Allahu Akbar to get into position, the takbirul intiqal. You've got to get into position, and then you've got to put the obligations in that are in that ruku', which is Subhana Rabbi al-Azim, etc. Out of all of these three technical facts, you don't need to actually achieve any of them. Meaning that if you were to say, if you were to go into here and you hadn't said Allahu Akbar by that time, you're semi into ruku'ah, but you just didn't say the takbir. If you said Allahu Akbar to go into takbir, to go into ruku'ah and didn't get into ruku'ah, you're semi into it, kind of messed up. If you went into a dodgy one, whether you said takbir or not, and started saying Subhana Rabbil Azim, you know what I mean? I'm saying that what you need to know is that whatever attempt of ruku'ah that you've made, all of it will be acceptable. Ideally, we want to get into this position, say Allahu Akbar, get into here, stay SubhanAllah. That's super safe. You know 100% I made the rak'ah if you did that. But most people don't, right? They're all making a judgment call. Did I make it? Did I not make it? Did I say Allahu Akbar first, or did he say SubhanAllah? You know what I mean? And obviously, as we covered last week, if there's doubt, you've got to assume that you've missed it. But if you have made any kind of movement towards or said Allahu Akbar, even if you haven't got to ruku', it was good enough as long as you didn't hear Sami Allahu liman hamida. Is that clear? So as long as you've achieved it, you got Jum'ah, and then you're going to then stand up afterwards and pray one rak'ah because you made that one rak'ah. If you got there too late, this is what the imam is saying, that you now need to establish the dhuhr prayer. The dhuhr prayer. وَإِنْ أَدْرَكَ أَقَلَّ مِنْ ذَلِكَ, and whoever catches less than that, then he completes it as dhuhr. This is after the imam has raised his head. إِذَا كَانَ نَوَى الظهر. And he puts a condition here which is very interesting. This is very interesting. He goes, as long as he intended dhuhr. So this second part is, if he gets less than that, meaning he missed the second ruku'ah. Right, so let's reset and start again. Imam's praying Jum'ah prayer, you've arrived at the masjid, you're rushing, you know it's tight anyway, and then you can see they're in the ruku' of the second rak'ah, and then, you know, you dive in, but by the time that you jumped in, he's come up. That means that whatever you're going to pray now with the imam, which is Rabbana wa lakal hamd, two sajdas and the tashahud, which is a healthy chunk, you missed the ruku', therefore you missed the rak'ah, therefore, you got less than one rak'ah of the prayer. Therefore, the statement of the imam and the meaning of the hadith is what? That you've now missed this prayer. Now you've got to pray dhuhr. Agreed? Right. Only if you intended dhuhr. Now you think about that. Is that what the majority of people do? No. For obvious reasons and for ignorance reasons. The ignorance reason means that very few people actually know that. That you need to have the intention for dhuhr. Right? So that's the ignorance part. The practical reason why nobody does that is because how do you even know this is the second rak'ah? Right? This could be the first rak'ah. You don't know that. You've come, you think, sick, made it. Right? Fully yani, making Jum'ah intention, even as you say, Allahu Akbar, I'm making Jum'ah intention, as even as you're going to ruku', you're thinking, you know, smashed it. Then he sits down, you're thinking, Ras. You know what I'm trying to say? You don't know. Right? You don't know, even if you Like you didn't make the ruku'ah. But you, some, I mean, it's happened to me. Like I've seen him stand up, go for sajda. I've looked at the time. I said, definitely the first rak'ah. No way did he pray the first rak'ah that quick. This has got to be the sajda of the first rak'ah. You go into a sajda with the full intention of Jum'ah prayer. But then he stays sitting down. You're thinking, Ras, what did he recite in the first one? Do you remember Shazda? It was 19, I think it was. I think it was 19 that we did Jum'ah in the Haram, and it was the day of Hajj. It was the day of Hajj. I want to say it was 19, could have been 18. It was Friday, day of Eid. We had a few days of Eids and Fridays, haven't we, in the last 5-10 years? Yeah, a good 3-4, isn't it? So it was, I want to say it's like 18 or 19. And obviously, listen, day of Eid for you lot, but I mean over there, day of Hajj is a mission. It's like the most, it's the biggest day of your life. It's the most difficult day of your life. It's like the day that you go to all different levels of energy and lack of energy, and you just reset all kind of criterion. And I tell you, man, it's hard enough as it is. Throw Jumu'ah into it, it's a disaster, right? And Jazallah Khair, this Imam, on that A19 or whatever, I reckon he did the Jumu'ah prayer, I think, in about 2 minutes. Guy smashed it, legend. Khutbah and Salah. Inna atainaka al-kawthar, wal asr, innal insana lafi khusr, bush. So I'm telling you now, it is absolutely possible that, because they know, man, these people who are going to be here, the vast majority of the people who are here, they haven't slept all night in Muzdalifah. Only the romantic liberals, you know, said, oh, looking at the stars, greatest night of my life. But nobody sleeps in Muzdalifah. You're all smashed knackered. Walked all the way to the Haram, done some stoning. You are dead, bro. The day before Arafah, killed yourself that day as well. When you arrive at the masjid, you probably walk because transport, forget that. Imam knows, yeah, and what am I going to kill him now for half an hour in this thingy? You know, they're all outside, burning. Forget that. So anyway, he played very quick, so it's possible. So anyway, what does Sheikh Uthaymeen say? In this kind of scenario, in this kind of situation, how will a person even know? There's got to be some kind of system. So listen to what he says. He says that according to our author, if... Oh, sorry, I should say something else. Actually, let me... You know what? When I go off script, I forget stuff. Let me just tell you something else important. He goes, the author has made a point of saying that you must intend dhuhr. You must intend dhuhr, and the time itself must be the time of dhuhr. So not only must you intend dhuhr, but it must be the time of dhuhr. What does that even mean? Because Jum'ah prayer, as we discussed last year or whenever, according to a number of scholars, because of some interpretations of actions of the companions of the Prophet ﷺ, is allowed to start before Jum'ah, before the Dhuhr start time. Jum'ah khutbah is before Zawal. And so you might be in an area in which it is establishing the Jum'ah following the opinion that we can start at 11, 11:30. There are a number of places that follow this opinion. Some of our guys that live in Calgary, there's a masjid there which establishes this. Actually, this is a straightforward Hanbali position. Straightforward, I mean, we covered it in this class, right? And so those that are strictly upon the madhab, they will do it, especially in those areas where they're stacking the Jum'ahs up, where there's a big metropolitan crowd and we need to get 3-4 Jum'ahs in. How do you do it? If this masjid could, it would have done it, by the way. It's because they don't accept that it can be established before the Zawal. You get my point? Otherwise, 100%, you'd 100% offer a 12:30 one, 1:30, 2:30. Of course you would. It makes things so much easier for everyone, parking, blah, blah, blah. So in those areas that follow the Hanbali position, they do that. And if they are not so hot on their position, what do? They spend the majority of the pre-time on the khutbah, and then they ensure that the prayer just is offered when the zawal... People play around with it like this. So what the author is saying here, Sheikh Uthaymeen is saying, is that what you've got to be sure of, what you've got to make sure, is that not only have you intended dhuhr, but that dhuhr has entered. Meaning that you cannot do this if the Jum'ah prayer was being prayed before Zawal. How can you start again at Dhuhr and Dhuhr hasn't entered? For Jum'ah, yeah, we're saying that Jum'ah is valid before Zawal. But Dhuhr isn't. By consensus, Therefore, you have to ensure that the Dhuhr time has started. Does that make sense? All right, that's just a little caveat that that we put. All right. So, therefore, it is a condition that if there's a person who comes late to the Jum'ah prayer and he caught less than one raka'ah, he came yani when the imam was in the second grouping of sajda, that he has to, when the salah finishes, he has to now complete this prayer as dhuhr. Two conditions. Number one, that he made the intention that this is my dhuhr prayer. And number two, that it is actually the time for dhuhr. So that the time for dhuhr must have entered, and he's made the intention that he's praying dhuhr. Now, if he did not make this intention for dhuhr, all right, and he enters the prayer with the imam with the intention for Jum'ah, because he thinks that it's the first rak'ah, but it's gone. Definitely, he realizes after they're sitting there in for tashahud, I actually didn't catch anything, right? What does this person do? Well, according to the author, what happens? Nafil. So according to the author, he carries on, he stands up, he then prays dhuhr, miskeen, and he doesn't even get it. So he prays dhuhr, but because he didn't intend dhuhr, he can't have that intention. So therefore, he can't have the dhuhr. Therefore, he completes the prayer. He can't just pull out and say, we'll sack that one, let me start again. He's got to complete it, and then he prays finishes it. That acts as a nafil for him. And then he prays dhuhr again. Is that clear what the author is saying? All right? I'll now give you the next statement after the adhan for Isha. All right, so Sheikh says, if there's a guy, he's come to the masjid, he's realized that he has, you know, not made that first raka'ah, now he realizes not made that second raka'ah. If he did not make the intention for dhuhr, then he's got to do it as nafil, and that's it. And then he has to now start again with a new dhuhr. Then Sheikh says, there are other people, what will they do? Yani, or rather, a person who's following this position, yani the author's position, what is he required to do then in this scenario when he comes to the masjid? He's actually going to come and he's going to wait. So if he's late, right? I want you to think about this now. If he's late to the masjid and he sees the imam in the stand up, right? Or in the sajda, rather, actually, let's just make it easy. He doesn't know, does he? Is this the first rak'ah of sajdas or is it the second rak'ah of sajdas? And so therefore what the Hanbali madhab is saying is that this guy has to wait and see if the imam stands up. If the imam stands up, then we say Allahu Akbar, we join him with the niyyah of Jum'ah, that's the end of it. If the imam sits down, no problem now, I've missed Jum'ah, so I'm now going to join with the intention of Dhuhr, and I'm going to join him. And frankly, this is what all Muslims should be doing. This is the correct position, this makes sense, and it's the one exception only to the principle that you don't hesitate. You know, there's an idea, you'll see this from people, that they come late for Salah, and they don't go into the position of the imam. They wait to see what's the imam going to do next. There's no basis for that in any of the other prayers of the week. But for the Jum'ah prayer, there is a basis because you don't know what intention to make. Whereas in the other scenarios, a person comes for Isha and he's waiting to see what the imam does. Or sometimes it's not even that he's waiting for the imam, he just wants to not go down into sajda, lazy fish. Yeah, he just wants to stay standing. What's the basis there? There is no other prayer that's being prayed. It's an Isha prayer, there is no issue. Whereas of course in the Jum'ah prayer, there is a basis for that. Is that clear? Sheikh says, there's a second position in this matter. What's the second position? He goes, he will enter into the prayer with the intention for Jum'ah. He doesn't know what the score is. He doesn't know whether it's the beginning or the end or the first or the second or whatever. So he makes intention, joins the prayer. If it works out that he's in the first rak'ah, he just carries on. He carries on and he's got the Jum'ah prayer, obviously, and that's fine. But if he realizes that he has not caught a rak'ah, then he will carry on and make the intention for Dhuhr as soon as the imam says, Assalamu alaikum rahmatullah. And if you think about it, this is what every single person does. This is what actually all the people have done, always, never knowing actually what they're doing. But this is the practice of the people. This is the practice of all of the people of the world, because very few people know that you have to make this condition of the world. And everybody's just been hoping, you know, hope that that's actually, you know, acceptable, that works. So I just, yeah, change, you know, I had the intention for Jum'ah. Basically, they're changing their intention, right? They're changing their intention in the middle, which alarm bell should be ringing. Here's what Sheikh Uthaymeen says. He goes, this position is the correct one. He goes, this is the correct position, and here's his reasoning. And it's an interesting, well, it's interesting reasoning what he says. He goes, because Dhuhr is actually a branch of Jum'ah. It's an offshoot of Jum'ah. It is also, they are two prayers which are basically replacements of one another, right? If one is not offered, then the other one is offered. But they are covering the same time period. They are effectively the same prayer, but in a different format. Yes? It's not to be seen like other examples. He carries on. He says, he goes, فَإِذَا انْتَقَلَ مِنَ الْجُمْعَةِ إِلَى الظُّهْرِ. He says that, so if a person changes their intention from Jum'ah to Dhuhr, like he does when the Imam says, Salaamu Alaikum Rahmatullah, then he stands up to pray Dhuhr, because he, you know, he's got obviously all those units to done. What has he changed from? He's changed from the Asl to the Badal. He's changed from the default prayer, which is Jum'ah, to the branched prayer or the offshoot, which is Dhuhr. He hasn't changed yani from one asl to a whole different asl. He hasn't changed from Dhuhr to Asr, for example. He's changed from what is the original prayer of that time period, which is Jum'ah, to the replacement prayer for that time period, which is Dhuhr, which is the Dhuhr of the Dhuhr time period. وَكِلَاهُمَا فَرْضُ الْوَقْتِ. Both of these prayers, Jum'ah and Dhuhr, are obligations of the time period, not yani anything else. They are obligations of the Dhuhr time, aren't they? You can't be praying Jum'ah in Maghrib time, for example. The difference of a Zawal is a minor one. They are both yani the obligations of that time period. Sheikh then says, He goes, an interesting observation about this particular issue is that it goes against a well-known qaida. It goes against, what we're saying now, goes against a well-known principle. And what is this principle? إِنَّ الْإِنْتِقَالِ مِنْ مُعَيِّنٍ إِلَى مُعَيِّنٍ يُبْتِلُ الْأَوَّلِ وَلَا يَنْعَقِدُ الثَّانِي بِهِ, which is translated as, when you move from one specific act to another specific act, yani when you change from or move from or change your intention from one specific act to another specific act, that action itself invalidates the first one and doesn't allow the second one to even start. Meaning it's not something which can ever happen. We cannot allow this to exist. If you change from one specific thing to another specific thing, you've invalidated the first one by your change of intention, and you didn't even establish the one that you're trying to because you started it halfway. Yeah, you get the point, right? It actually makes sense. Because if you change your intention, think about intention. Think about wudu. Think about any condition for salah. If the condition goes, you intend I'm not in wudu, or you intend I'm not praying dhuhr, how can you carry on with that prayer as dhuhr? Of course, the dhuhr is cancelled. All right, let's say now you change your intention to asr. How can it be asr when the intention has to be present before the act starts? Make sense? So whenever you change from a specific, like a dhuhr, to a specific, like an asr, neither have you got the first, neither have you got the second. The dhuhr is cancelled out, the asr is cancelled out. You got nothing. Sheikh says, I openly admit that in this position, we've gone against this principle. We're saying, actually, if you establish the Jum'ah prayer, and you change your intention from Jum'ah to dhuhr, you did cancel the Jum'ah, but you got the dhuhr. And the reason is because it's not like the previous example. We're actually changing from the same thing, effectively. We're going from the asl to the, we're going from the default to the offshoot. We're not yani changing the nature of what's going on. So he goes, an example, a person, he enters into the salah, so he goes, Allahu Akbar, behind an imam, and he's saying, yeah, this is dhuhr. Then he realizes that this is actually asr. He realizes this is asr. He's actually prayed dhuhr. I was here 2 hours ago. I prayed dhuhr already. So now he's stuck, isn't he? He's praying behind an imam who's praying asr. He's made the clear intention in his head that he's praying dhuhr. Only after a few minutes has he realized he hasn't. Yeah, he's already prayed dhuhr, that he's got the wrong intention. So then, what does this person do? He intends asr. Let's just say, you know, he thinks, well, you know, what's he going to do? So I intend asr. Sheikh says, so this is what we're going to say to this person. الظهر بطلت لأنك أبطلتها. ظهر, well, that's gone. Because you are the one who cancelled out الظهر. Because you started with the intention of ظهر, and then you said, I'm changing that. So once you change your intention to something else, that's gone. So you don't have ظهر now with this imam. والعصر لم تنعقد. And as for asr, then even though you've made the intention for asr, that hasn't even started because you're starting halfway through. How can you be claiming asr when you're halfway through the action? And you did not start asr from the beginning. والمعين لابد أن تنويه من الأول. يعني when you're doing something which is specific, you have to make the intention for it from the beginning. And that's when that qaida applies. That's the scenario in which the qaida applies. As for us, in our scenario, this is an exception to this qaida. Why is it an exception? Because the Jum'ah is the asl, dhuhr is the badal. We're not moving from dhuhr to asr, two completely different things. We're moving from the original, yani, default prayer of that time period to the replacement prayer of that same time period, which, by the way, on any other day would be the default anyway. Does that make sense? So this is a very rare scenario, and it's a very beautiful exception. Wallahu ta'ala a'lam. Alright, think about that, folks. It's a nice point. Okay, guys. Alright, so remember, next week, inshallah, we are not yani on site, but the lesson is going ahead at 8:35 online, and then the week after it will be 8:35. So in 2 weeks we'll be back on site, next week we'll be online. بارك الله فيكم وجزاكم الله خير. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت واستغفرك اللهم وأتوب إليك. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.